evening. Welcome to Lakeshore Public Media's ongoing community discussion, Race and Justice Here and Now. I'm your host, Michael Puente, reporter with WBEZ in Chicago and host of Off Mic on Fridays on Lakeshore Public Radio. For those watching on Facebook Live, your questions are welcome. The issue of police and its dealings with people of color has been ongoing for years and even decades. But the recent death of George Floyd at the hands of four officers from Minneapolis last month has put the discussion back on the front burner. There's been talk nationwide and here in Northwest Indiana about ways to reform police. In Gary, for example, Mayor Jerome Prince has created a commission to study the city's police department's use of force policy. Our guests tonight are four dynamic individuals who bring their own unique perspective on the issue of police reform. They are Elias Stewart of Maryville.
I am so sorry. Can you hear me? I cannot hear you right now.
Hammond City Councilwoman Katrina Alexander and Dion Campbell, Chief of Police in Michigan City, Indiana. Welcome to all of you two here on Lakeshore Public Media. Well, when we put this panel together, we really wanted to get the perspective of young people, many of whom are leading the way in this discussion in protests and other ways. Jeremiah Sims recently participated in his first protest. I see his video conked out right there. Jeremiah Sims recently participated in his first protest. So we'll start with him. And as technology is, hopefully he doesn't, the video's okay. Jeremiah, why did you want to participate in your first protest and what was it like?
Well, I knew that with everything happened, for me personally, the Ahmaud situation had really touched me too. I'm not sure if you guys heard about that. I believe that happened in Georgia. And when the George Floyd thing happened, that kind of took me by storm and it brought up a bunch of emotions and things of that nature. And I knew at that moment I had to turn like my tears into change. So it kind of just fell into place from there. And it was really amazing to see not only Black people, but all people of color out there for one cause, looking for a solution and knowing that it started with them, even taking a step if they were uncomfortable in the things they were doing, but still putting themselves on the line to show love. And it was an amazing event. It was an amazing chance to witness love. But the recent situations in America and the emotions that came up with it really started that for me.
And what was the reception that you had? Your demonstration happened in Portage, correct?
Yes, sir.
What was sort of the reception you got from people there and also people looking at you in the demonstration?
It was mostly positive. It was some negative comments here and there. You know, people always have different ways of going about things, but it was mostly positive. And even if they weren't, I think a big step that we took was actually able to listen to people. Even if we didn't agree on the things, we sat there and we listened to each other. It was mostly positive. You know, we had some people who came and wanted to almost incite trouble, but we took the higher road. So overall, a very positive experience.
Now, Elias Stewart, your involvement in this movement started with a traumatic episode in your life. Would you care to tell us about that?
First, give an honor to God. My name is Elias Stewart. I'm the founder of the ASW Foundation, hashtag I Am Them, which is a nonprofit organization. I started my freshman year of high school in honor of my two brothers that were killed. So what my nonprofit organization does is we're a community outreach for young people in the city of Gary, not just Gary, but Northwest Indiana and the Chicagoland. And we're currently building a youth center on the east side of Gary, Indiana.
Tell us a little bit about, I understand there was a situation with your brother who passed away. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
My brother Anthony was killed on November 18, 2007. My brother James was killed on March 18, 2014. Anthony was 16 years old. James was 20 years old. Anthony was killed by a 15-year-old young man, which has become the motivation behind work with young people in the community, just due to the decisions that the young man that killed him made.
Hammond City Councilwoman Katrina Alexander, how do you see the relationship between Hammond's police force and the African-American community in Hammond?
The for the most part, I see the police force as wanting to work together with everyone, especially in light of everything that's going on. We had some recent protests, and the last one, for sure, the police were definitely working with the community. We did it with the Ministerial Alliance, some elected officials, and the police department, leading from City Hall all the way to the police station, where we concluded in prayer there. And from that day, we actually are starting a conversation with the elected officials, with the police department, and with the Ministerial Alliance to see how we can continue to bring about the change within the city itself. If there is something going on, getting people to feel comfortable to speak up about it is something that we're definitely trying to do. No, it's something that I want to see happen, being that I've been in Hammond my entire life. I want to see those changes happen, and not the things that have been going on, even as of recently, from George Floyd to, everybody else. I mean, it's just one of those things you want to see that change in those conversations that were not happening before happen.
Right. Michigan City Police Chief Deion Campbell, you've been hearing and listening to the discussion nationwide on television, radio, it's everywhere. And here in Northwest Indiana, and here tonight in this discussion, how are you taking it as a member of law enforcement or as an African-American man?
It's the situation we live in right now is very complex. And for me, I'm looking at it as an opportunity to improve upon the system called law enforcement. I think reform is needed in our country. In many areas when it comes to law enforcement. I think this area really struck my heart because I think all of us saw the pain of people, in particular Black people, and what this incident, and I'm referring to the George Floyd incident, did to everyone. And it just struck a chord and made us realize our humanity and take a self-examination of the things that we're doing right and the things that we're doing wrong. And for me personally, I thought it was a great opportunity for us to take a look at all the systems, the cultures that have been built, and make sure that every citizen in our country has rights and that they're treated fairly.
What was your reaction when you saw, like many of us on TV, what happened to George Floyd in that 9-minute video?
Well, I actually watched the video, and then towards the end, I couldn't watch it. I understood. I read about it beforehand, and it was tough for me. I'm a lover of people. The reason I do my job is because I love our city. I love the citizens. It was very difficult for me, and, you know, it touched me deeply in my heart to think that someone would die at the hands of law enforcement unjustly, and that's how it affected a lot of people in the law enforcement arena. I think, one of the things that I was proud about law enforcement was this was one of the first times that I've seen nationally that law enforcement agencies actually acknowledged that what happened was wrong. And I think that went a long ways with a lot of citizens that law enforcement was not silent, but there were many chiefs of police, many departments that walked with the citizens and said, this is not who we are. This is not what we believe in. And I think that was a first important step. As I look over our country nationally, the protests that were most peaceful were the ones where law enforcement actually acknowledged that what happened was wrong. And I think that's a big first step.
Jeremiah, obviously there's been other incidents of police killing unarmed Black men around the country. What was your reaction when you saw that video? How did you take it personally?
Almost like, man, like again, because as I mentioned, my video had just surfaced a few months back. Michael Brown, Eric Garner, Breonna Taylor, things like that, just the things surrounding that. And something I want to say is that, a lot of people think that it was only George Floyd. No, George Floyd was just a tipping point for us and for a lot of things, because that was, you know, it was really unjustifiable. So for me to see that again, my reaction was fear, you know, having to leave the house every day, you know, whether it's to go to work, and the reality of, you know, maybe one day I could get pulled over and not make it back to my family. So my reaction was fear, and I really had to do my best to avoid becoming numb to the fact, because we've seen it so often.
You know, Jeremiah, Portage is a growing diverse community in Northwest Indiana, large city, no longer a smaller city, but still predominantly white. What has been your interaction with Portage police? How have they treated you over the years?
Overall, I've had pretty good interactions with Portage police. I think they do their best. I do think there are some things that they don't understand as far as like the threat that they are posed to people of color. And I just think there are certain things that they aren't aware of, but I don't think they're, it's in any of their heart's intent. At least I haven't had a run in personally, whereas, you know, it's in their intent to harm or anything like that. So overall, pretty good things. But I do think it is some things that they're unaware of that, and that could be changed to help fix the community for overall.
Aaliyah, same thing in Merrillville. Merrillville is one of our larger cities in Northwest Indiana, and growing diversity. What has there been any kind of interaction between you and the Merrillville Police Department, and how has that interaction been, positive or negative?
Personally, I really haven't had an interaction with Merrillville Police. Today, sadly, my car was broken in this morning, and a big shout out to Myers. During these times, there's just a lot going on, and he was very helpful, very caring. He cared about my situation. He cared about making sure my report was done. So anytime I've had to reach out to Merrillville Police, they've been helpful. For young men in my community, it's different. The person has been okay.
Councilwoman Alexander, you know, a lot of police departments are now having to look inward to see what issues they have in dealing with people of color. Even if the George Floyd, even if Minneapolis is hundreds of miles away, has that discussion started to take place in Hammond? And what are some of the issues that maybe they're not cognizant of, but that you see as perhaps needing working on or are issues in Hammond?
Honestly, I believe that the conversation is being had across the board, not just only in our city, but all cities, because the George Floyd incident, it really sparked, like I was saying before, that it sparked something that happened not only in the United States, but it happened globally. And it started this global protest. So like Jeremiah said, it was basically the straw that broke the camel's back. This was it, that people were extremely tired. So now police departments everywhere are looking into what's being done. And like a conversation that I have with people of individuals is, are you going to be the one that's going to stand up for the justice within your own department? Because as much as we talk about people complaining about what's going on, it just so happens that George Floyd's incident was aired via social media and it went viral. And it hurt not only the African-American community, it hurt everyone. Because to see someone stay on someone's back that long, to stay on their neck that long, was hurtful. And it's like, that could have been my brother. That could have been my father. That could have been my cousin. That could have been my student. It could have been any of those people, and you felt that worldwide. So conversations are being had. And like I was stating to someone is, are you going to be the one to say, you know what, we have injustice in our department, I'm going to take a stand? And they say, well, we need people to complain. Well, if you have the intimidation factor, people can complain all day, but the moment that they're intimidated because of the authority, it changes that dynamic immediately, and people don't want to say anything anymore. And that's something that I think has happened for years, the intimidation factor, because they say, I'm the authority.
Chief Campbell, the Michigan City Police Department, what was your background in terms of growing up and your interaction with law enforcement before you became a police officer?
I have a very unique background in that I grew up in a predominantly black neighborhood, and I went to an all-white school. My father is my father was a felon. And so my view and perspective of my father growing up was I saw him mowing the lawn in the prison field, which was maybe 500 feet from where I lived. Growing up, I had limited interaction with law enforcement. I don't really recall having any type of interaction. The first time that I really had an interaction with a law enforcement officer that I can remember was when I returned from college. And I was pulled over, and the officer wanted to know what I was doing in a particular area. And I told him I was just going to see my friend, and that rubbed me the wrong way. And, you know, I've had a second incident where I was pulled over for what I thought was no reason. But other than that, nothing really bad. So as far as my background, that's where I came from. I'm unique in that I grew up in the city that I serve. And we have a very diverse city, and we've always had very good relations when it comes to race. And this is the first time in the history of our country that I've seen a lot of divisiveness and a tearing away where it almost seems like there's a strategic plan to pit black people against white people, Republicans against Democrats. And I've never seen it like this before. And that makes things very, very difficult. So, you know, that was my background. I went to Indiana State University, and I have a degree in radio, television, film. And that's my background.
Well, you can have my job.
Okay.
I need this one. Well, let me ask you this. What propelled you, though, to go into law enforcement?
It was a need to serve people. Like I said, I love people. But, you know, and like most law enforcement officers, I came into this field desiring to protect and serve because I love my community. And it's unfortunate the times in which we live. I think that we have a very, very good police department, and the majority of the officers that are with us have a lot of common sense. They have a love for people. But it's hard sometimes because something that happens in Minnesota affects every law enforcement officer everywhere. But I get it. I get it because when we put on that uniform, whether you're black or white, you represent a system. And there are so many people that are upset with the system. We had nothing to do here in Michigan City what happened in Minneapolis, Minnesota, but it affected us. But I'm very proud to say even before the protests began, even before COVID-19 hit, our department had already strategically begun to build a culture that would positively impact our community. And one of the conversations that we had, we talked about not just having a warrior mentality, which has sort of evolved in law enforcement over the years, where they've become warriors and forgotten about the service part. And so one of the things we did was we went back to the originator of policing, Sir Robert Peel, and we began to look at his principles. And one of the things that he talked about was being a guardian of the community rather than just a warrior. And we've been building that into the fabric, into the DNA of our department. And it's changing our culture. It's removing the thing where a lot of law enforcement officers have always felt like it was us against them. And we're removing that within our own ranks. And so I think that I was proud of our department because we've been proactive in that. We are already having talks about our policies and procedures and seeing what we can do better. But we have a very conscientious community. And our department in particular has received so much love for our community because they saw how we handled our protest here, how we actually assisted, we got involved, and we showed great compassion. That meant a lot to our community that their police department got it. And we're looking forward to going into the future. We're not a perfect department by any means, but we are making strides, and the community is backing us and expecting transparency and change, and that's what they're going to get.
Well, I don't mean to have you dominate the conversation, but I do have one more follow-up question for you, and it's staying on you. In some of the protests that I've covered in Chicago, in Merrillville, in Hammond, some of the toughest rhetoric towards police officers, protesters, not all of them, some of them, have been toward African-American police officers, some of the toughest language. How does that affect you? Are you hurt by that? And are you seeing where African-American police officers are really being somewhat targeted?
Yeah, I think it comes along with the territory. The way that I look at it as I look at myself as a leader, and I'm dealing with people who have different perspectives, who have had different experiences, and I have to operate in a level of maturity outside of my own self. If I have self-motivations in what I'm doing, it's going to be very difficult, and I can take these things personally, but I don't take them personally because I see a bigger picture. And so part of that requires me to be able to hear people who I don't necessarily agree with, but having the patience to hear them out, listen to what they say, find where they're at in life, and then begin to have a dialogue and a conversation. One of the things that I found is that building relationships with people who disagree with you can tend to change their perspectives. And I think that that's a key to law enforcement community relationships, is the ability to take off that uniform and become real. I don't wear a uniform that often because I want people to be able to relate to me as a man, as a human being, first and foremost. And the conversation generally goes a lot better. And once they see my humanness and I see their humanness, and once any of our officers begin to engage on that manner, it changes the dynamic of the relationship. And that's eventually what we're after.
Jeremiah, when you see Chief Campbell sitting there, a police officer, what are some of the suggestions you might have for police officers in dealing with young people, when dealing with young African-Americans? How, from your perspective, can they do their job better?
I think just as Chief Campbell was saying, and the fact that, you know, we have to go back to serving and doing these things and doing things of this nature, because I do think that's the part that's been lost. You know, it's a warrior mentality. It's almost the system against its people when the system is supposed to be here to serve its people. You know, whether it's just taking time, you know, and actually showing that, you know, you're not just here to uphold the law, but showing that you serve the law as well. Don't view yourself more than a law. We actually show these officers and things more accountable because you're here to make sure we're following it. So making sure that they're actually, and even if you don't have one of your badge, whether you're at the supermarket or things, like, carry that love with you, like carry that responsibility with you to serve the people around you. And that's something that I think we could do. But also, I think like racial equity training or things like this, like things that, because whether we want to face it or not, like the police force is, people come from different backgrounds, and certain people might not be educated on these things, and that's the reality of it. So educating our officers, especially when they have to deal with people of color, because a lot of things, people grow up in prejudice and racist environments and things like that, and they might not even realize that they deal with these things, but through education, looking deeper into their hearts, like, they can realize, like, I deal with these things. So that's something we have to do. We can't leave it at this guy's a cop, so he should know, but he's a cop, so let's make sure he's going farther to educate himself.
Aaliyah, my question for you is the pain and the anger from African-Americans towards, well, some African-Americans towards police officers and police departments, is it justified, or how do you see it?
I have, like, some of it is justified. I have a different standpoint sometimes. I feel like for African Americans, it's not racism, it's placism for us. I feel like we have to get in position and stand up and have a voice in our communities and have a voice in things that's going on. I feel like we have to have a voice in both sides in order for another culture to respect us and respect the value of our lives. We have to respect us. And I feel like if Black lives will matter, it has to matter to us as a culture. So I feel like when 104 people get shot in one weekend and no one's out marching and a 3-year-old little boy gets killed and no one's snitching and telling what happens, how can you tell someone else that Black lives matter when we don't stand up for ourselves in our own community? So I feel like the anger is understandable. It's like, when you have a wound on your leg or something, you fall and you keep picking at it, and your mom tells you to stop picking at it, but you keep going, and finally it gets infected. Like, the world is infected with a bunch of angry African Americans. And when you're tired of being tired, you react the way you react. So I feel like it's justified, but we have to play both roles and both sides and stand up for both things. I feel like it's time for us, if you know your cousin killed this person, I feel like it's time for you to admit that, hey, I know my cousin did this, and let their family have rest. I think it's time for us to stop covering it up, because it's more black on black crime than it is black on Caucasian crime or Caucasian on African American crime.
What do you think about the term Black Lives Matter? It's provocative. It's meant to make people think. Is it too provocative to be effective? Or do you feel that, depending on your viewpoint, people are going to take it a certain way? Some people take a negative. Some people see positives in it. A lot of people see positives.
I think that it's positive, if you ask me. I feel like it has a positive meaning behind it. Black Lives Matter, it does matter. I mean, our melanin, the meaning behind us, what we are, what we bring to the table, what we were built on, the things that our ancestors had to go through. I feel like I was born in 2000. So after a certain time period, we changed as a generation, like the values, the morals, the things that we believed in and the things that we would take. I feel like a lot of millennials, if they were born now and had to survive in 1960, it would be a lot of different things going on because of the boldness that we have. So I think with the Black Lives Matter, I love it because they do matter. I think all lives matter sometimes, but during this time, it's about us because we're forced to think all lives matter rather than seeing that African Americans' lives matter in the day in the life of Asian person. I haven't met one person that will want to be African-American part
of it. I'm in City Councilwoman Katrina Alexander. How do you see that term Black Lives Matter? What is the conversation like in Hammond's community with that term? Is it mostly positive, or do you feel it has pushed some people away?
I think that it is a positive thing. But at the same time, it's one of those things that we have to continue to educate people on. Why are we fighting the way we're fighting to bring justice to the unjust? Being an educator, you always want to make sure that your students are on the right card of the table, right? That they're playing the cards right. You might can't control which cards you get, but you can control how you play them. So if we really want to see the changes happen, you have what you have now. Positive protests going on. So saying Black Lives Matter, you'll get some people that say, well, all lives matter. That's true. All lives do matter. But like Aaliyah said, we have to want to matter to ourselves as well. So we can say Black Lives Matter all day, but if you don't know your own worth, your own potential, that phrase Black Lives Matter means nothing, because that means your life doesn't matter enough for you to care about wanting to make the difference in yourselves, to even get to the point where all lives will matter. So having these conversations and these differences of opinions, it's great to have great conversation, and understanding that we have to get to the place where we want to see those changes happen, understand them. What is our end result? So with the protests going on, what is the end result? We all say we want Black Lives to matter, but we're also saying, well, we have to empower people to understand they matter themselves. And when you matter yourself, then the difference really can happen.
And those looking at Lakeshore Public Radio's Be Race and Justice Here and Now, if you're looking at our Facebook, you can ask a question, and we'll get that to our panelists here. Councilwoman Alexander, I have one more question for you, at least for this segment. If you're in a unique position that you have power. You're sitting on the Hammond City Council. So you can sort of, if sort of there's pushback on having some kind of discussion, you can kind of force the envelope in introducing a resolution or something like that. Are you feeling a sense of having to get that discussion going with Hammond Police or those in the community? Or do you feel that people are receptive to conversation about change?
I think that right now we don't have to introduce anything because the conversations are being had. Now, the moment that the conversation stopped, then yes, we will need to keep looking further. You know, you have some people saying they want to create the diversity and things like that. My thing with those is, if you're not having everybody to the table, not just the ones that are going to talk about the stuff you want to hear, meaning you have young people, you have millennials, you have the older section, we have colored or, you know, African-Americans and Hispanics and Caucasians of all different backgrounds and dynamics, then you're really not going to get anything across to anyone because you want it to continue to be one-sided. And I think in Hammond for so long, some things have been one-sided, and now we're starting to bring about change. Look at me. I'm the first African-American to be elected to the to be a council at large, and the first African-American woman. So with that, that's finally saying that people are tired of different things and they want to see something better. So we have to continue to say, you know what? We can have different people in power, but don't take that power to your head, because you can have power, but if you misuse that power, then you didn't do what you were supposed to do in the first place.
Chief Campbell, there's a ongoing discussion nationwide about defunding or reallocating funds from the police department to other services, perhaps a mental health services in a community. When you're hearing ideas or discussions like that, what do you think about having less resources available to your police department if something like that came to Michigan City?
I'm not a big proponent of the term defunding the police, but no one's really clearly defined what that means. One of the things that I do understand and have been musing about is the fact that maybe police officers are required to do more than they should. I don't think that a parent should call the police because their child is acting up. I don't think that's a police officer's responsibility, but we have been tasked with that. I don't think it's a police officer's responsibility to respond to a call because people are having a property dispute that has nothing really to do with policing. And so when you talk about defunding the police, the thing that I would say is, if you're going to move funds, then there's going to be some of the responsibilities that police officers have taken that they should not take. But this is going to require some other service to be available 24/7 to be able to respond to these type of situations. So I don't necessarily agree with defunding the police, because for me, that equates to safety and training. And those things are highly necessary. And particularly in the times in which we live, I think training and hiring practices and putting police officers in the best position that they can possibly be will help with community relationships. One of the issues that you have with police officers is they're underpaid, they're overworked, and they're human beings and they get stressed out. And when you're overworked and underpaid and you're not happy, you can tend to make some mistakes. So I'm not a big fan of defunding the police if it just means stripping them of money just to strip them of money. But I think there is some value in re-looking at some of the things that police officers are required to do, and maybe taking some of that and putting that responsibility on other entities within the community. And that way I can understand it. But just to defund the police because of the situation that we have right now in our country, I don't think that that's the best idea. I would hate to have any community without a properly run police department.
When you're looking at Lakeshore Public Media's ongoing community discussion, Race and Justice Here and Now, I'm your host, Michael Puente, reporter with WBEZ and host of Off Mic on Fridays on Lakeshore Public Radio at 11 o'clock. And for those watching on Facebook Live, your questions are welcome and we can read them on air during the show. Let me ask you this, Aaliyah. If you were addressing a police department, you have Chief Campbell here, what are some of the ideas that you might have that could go a long way in opening that discussion between the African-American community and police?
Personally, I would feel like community transformation is transforming our community and protecting our community, like Keith Campbell was speaking on with defunding. The idea for some people, a march they just had in Maryville, I believe it was Friday, a Juneteenth march that they had at the police department. They marched from Maryville High School to Maryville Police Department. And the idea of it is to not take away money from the police departments, not to strip you all of money. But I think that what so many people are trying to say in their point is some police officers have the authority that they have because they're misusing the money. The money's not being used for the correct things. So when they say to fund the police department, it's not all police departments, but it's the idea of the people that are put in these positions, like their pensions and things like that. For instance, the young people, the people that killed George Floyd, the fact that they were able to do something like that serve federal time and still have the chance to receive attention is what I think a lot of people are trying to get their message across, that they should be defunded, because how is it that you can do such an act and still receive those awards? That's like being in class and you're acting up in class, and then at the end of the week, it might be a pizza party, but you've acted up the entire week, but you still get awards. How do you learn your lesson? How do you learn that what you did was not correct? So I think that when a lot of people are saying defund, that's what they're trying to get their message about. Maybe they're using the incorrect wording of it, but I think that's what really they're trying to get and portray through defunding the police. For me, I think that community transformation and intergenerational programs are things that need to be brought together in order for us to come together and actually have a civilized conversation with the police departments, especially in underprivileged communities such as Gary, East Chicago, and areas as such.
Jeremiah, when you're with friends and you're talking over some of these situations, what are they saying? How are they treated by police? Are, is it rough usually, or are some of these concerns warranted and police need to change the way they go about dealing with young people, especially young African-American men?
Like I was earlier, I think police have to realize that, just as Chief Campbell was saying, that when you put on that, you're part of a system. So even if your actions didn't get about, you have to realize that the stipulations you have now have in America aren't the best. So I think it has to be on police to go the extra foot, like when making a, you know, when making a stop or things like that, like talking to a human as a human, you know, like not disrespecting them, not just trying to exercise your authority, but making sure that you're talking to us as we're human, you know, like showing love, you know, things like that. When I talk to my friends and things like, is to be honest, it's a lot of them have an episode of defense, which I can understand, which I've had to battle myself, constantly hold myself accountable to that. Because when you see all of this going on in America, it's hard for Black men, it's hard for Black men and women, to live in that reality of you leave your house and you can possibly never make it back to the people that are supposed to protect you. So now it's, when I talk to friends and things my age, like, you know, they're in defense mode because, like, they're like, man, I don't want anybody to take me from my family. Like, I don't want any of these things to happen. So, I think police have to go the extra mile to serve. And I think really that's where it begins at, where, you know, police serving.
Chief Campbell, in Michigan City, with some of your officers there, how are they taking some of the criticisms that they hear about how they could, when they approach either young people, young African-Americans, are they recognizing some of their limitations and ways they could work better with them? Or like everybody, when we're criticized, we tend to take a sort of more standoffish approach. You know, we're all perfect and we're not. How are they taking the criticism and how are you taking it?
Well, to be transparent with you, it's very difficult. It's very difficult to be a police officer right now. And the sentiment, not only in our department, but among a lot of departments, is we're not sure if we want to be in law enforcement right now because we can't win. You know, I'll give you an incident that happened where some of our officers went on a call, and after the call was over, some young kids walked up to them and wanted to look in the police cars. And these officers obliged them, brought them in the police car, started to have fun, talk with them, interacted with them. And the mother was so happy with the way that our officers interacted with her children that she posted a picture and raved about our department. And so we posted that picture to our Facebook page, and we were criticized that it was just a photo op, as if we went out, solicited it, and took the photo. And particularly after this incident, you know, I've been having some dialogue with some of our officers, and they're really hesitant to act. They're hesitant to do anything and say anything because they don't want to be perceived in the wrong light. So it's a very difficult time for our officers. And I actually just sent an email encouraging them. Just we'll ride this time frame through. But it's a part of our mission and vision. The goal is, you know, better community relationships, and that's where we're heading. And things that need to be reformed, one of the things we're happy about is that they will be reformed. I'm happy about being transparent. I'm happy about looking at our policies and saying, wait, we need to change this. We need to change the way that we're doing things. You know, and one of the things I think that you'll find is that a lot of the policies are already in place. And it's just, I think the police departments nationally have done a poor job in communicating the system and how it works. And I think that's our fault. And I think you're going to see a better push and a better use of social media in the future to kind of relay and to write a narrative and not allow a narrative to be written about us and for us.
Chief Campbell, but do you see police departments, no matter if it's Michigan City, Crown Point, Portage, Chicago, Gary, are they going to be able to sort of withstand the ongoing protests, the political pressure, to at least acknowledge that perhaps their department needs some change? Are they going to be able to sit back a month or 2 months from now without doing anything? Or do you think the ongoing discussion is going to, you know, compel them to at least acknowledge that change may need to happen?
I think that we are in a season of reformation. I think that this generation has risen up and they are resolute in changing things. The world that we live in has absolutely changed. It is a very different place than you or I have ever imagined. And I think that the young generation was born for such a time as this, and that their voice is going to be heard. And I think overall, the majority of our citizens want to see a reform in our nation, and it's going to happen. And I think that those departments that don't make the necessary changes, that they're going to remove their leadership. I think that you're going to see a push nationwide to put leaders in place that get it, that understand, and that are reignited with a passion to serve their community and do what's right, but at the same time, not backing down from the principles of policing. There are absolutely times when we need to be tough guys, tough women. We need to deal with the ugliness of the world. People don't call us when everything is wonderful, but they call us when things are very bad, and you need warriors at that time. But our responsibility now is to understand when to be a warrior and when to be a guardian. And the majority of what we do has to be a guardian. And that way we can build the trust of the community in which we serve.
Councilwoman Alexander, where do you want to see the conversation go from here? We're already past a month since George Floyd's passing. Where do you want to see the conversation go?
Where I want to see the conversation go is getting people to sit down at the table, meaning starting different in the different districts where you have like your crime watches, but no, changing that and actually saying, you know, we're going to have a community forum where we want to hear what you're going to say, not already have these preconceived notions of this is what I want to see happen, but actually being an open ear to listen to what the people are saying. The people know what they want. They know the changes they want to see happen in your cities. All you have to do is listen. Young people know what they want. You know, I'm not too far from Aaliyah and Jeremiah in age, but I'm an educator. I teach in a high school, so I teach teenage students all the time, and they have a mindset that you can actually change. You can change the older generation. People want to see that you actually care. And when you can show people that you actually care, instead of saying, no, you're going to do it this way, you know, for so long, we've heard that. It's my way or the highway, right? You've heard that from your parents, and that's all you know. So when you are saying that we want these changes to happen, you have to be willing to listen from the young person to the older person. We're all going through the same thing. You know, it's been hard being an African-American. And sometimes it's easy, but other times when you're not treated the same, you're not treated the same, even if you have more education, you don't have the same standards, and that's male or female. You can't fight for the same jobs because they don't look at you in the same way. So if we're going to have the discussion, it doesn't just start in the police departments. It starts with our businesses. It starts in our universities. We see different things happening in our university. Look at just what happened at Purdue with the young man that said what he said, and now he's expelled from school. The conversation is not just happening with our police. It's happening in our schools. It's happening in our businesses, because people are just tired, and they want to say, the Pledge of Allegiance says, indivisible with liberty and justice for all. We don't have justice for all. It's never been justice for all. This pledge that we say is not what it is. We can't say we have equality. We can't say that it's that we want people to be together because it's indivisible. It's not supposed to be separate. But yet we've been treated as separate for so long. This is why the fight is where it is. And we're all at the point where we're like, look, we're not bad. African-Americans and Hispanics, we are all going for the same thing, but it seems that African-Americans and Hispanics have to work harder to get to the same place that our Caucasian brothers and sisters are at. In a political world, it's hard. It's a hard fight to get into the position. It was an extremely hard fight to get into this role that you, for so long, has been dominated by other persuasions. You see that across the board. So it's up to us to say, you know what? We are the same. We bleed the same blood. Black is just a color, but I'm sorry. No one is black. No one is white. We all have different pigments.
Leah, us in the media, us in the press, we're ready to always move on to the next story. We're already looking at perhaps Major League Baseball coming along. Summer is out there. We're still dealing with the pandemic and unemployment and the state coming back. How are young people going to ensure that these issues with police and police reform are not regulated to the back pages anymore, that it continues to be on the front burner? Do you see young people such as yourself sort of moving on to other things, or are they going to stay on it?
I honestly believe that young people are going to stay on it. Social media is very heavy. It is very powerful, especially for our generation. And every day down my feed, I see Black Lives Matter, arrest the cops that killed Breonna Taylor, Breonna Taylor, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd. This officer was only fired for killing Breonna Taylor. I see so much stuff. So I think that we might get distracted for a little bit, but it's still there. Like, this was something where when George Floyd cried out for his mother, like, every mother in America had to stop and freeze, because it's like a mother instinct. And for me, having a sibling that was killed, it felt like that could have been my brother. Like Councilwoman Katrina said earlier today, like, that could have been my sibling. That could have been me. We've seen in certain cases where African-American women have been arrested and, oh, they killed themselves, or, oh, we don't know what happened and things like that. So I feel like as young people, we're really focused now and we're really paying attention. And you'll be surprised at how many young people are really focusing on their culture and their history now, trying to find out where we come from, what our values were. Just to piggyback off of what Councilwoman Alexander said, when the system was created, we weren't free. We've never been free. So how can a system that wasn't set up for us work for us if it wasn't meant for us to even be free? I don't think that years from now and years before, it was meant for us to even be free. So I think that young people nowadays, we're definitely not our ancestors, and we're definitely not taking what was taken before. We're really going to stand up for ourselves. So I think that the boldness and the meekness that we have within ourselves, I don't think that this is going to die down at all. It might die down for other communities, but for us as a culture, I think that it's going to be up there for a while.
Jeremiah, you're sitting there in Portage, but what's your message to police departments and leaders in Valparaiso, in Indianapolis, Fort Wayne, in Chicago? When they look at you, they might see a young person and say, well, maybe their attention span, they're not going to continue this. What's your message to the leaders out there for change? What do you want to see them do?
For so long, just to be honest in things, you know, first off, I'm so happy that we have people of color and power here actually speaking on the things and holding people accountable to it. Just as a young person, we often do feel like our voice isn't heard or people in offices oftentimes don't care about us. But to answer your question, I think they need to know that we're serious. You know, this isn't a moment. This is a movement. Like we're done. Like we're done putting up with these things constantly. Like we're getting to the point where people are tired of protesting. Like I just don't think how, and just to break it down more, I'm not sure if people understand the trauma, the mental health that come with these situations for people of color. Like this is serious. Like we have traumatic effects from these things. And I think because of those things, because every time something like this happens, it hits home. I think that's what's going to constantly bring our people to want to see change, because it's not George Floyd or his family or Breonna Taylor or her family that's just dealing with these things, but it's all of us. I have to wake up and be aware of my surroundings everywhere I go. I have to be in a reality of the things I'm wearing puts me more at a suspicion to die or just things like that. So I don't think it's going to stop. Because it affects our daily lives. Like it's very hard to not live in reality and be aware of the things going on around us. So I ask these people in offices and these leaders to partner with us. You want our votes, you want our things like that. Well, we actually need to see your action.
Do you see yourself remaining active in either protesting or discussions or demonstrations? Do you see yourself staying in the fight?
Absolutely. Just because of those things, you know, I look around my friend group and a question that I honestly have to think about, which I think is one of the saddest things ever, is, man, like, which one of my homies can it be? Like, which one of my friends can I lose one day? So just because of those things, you know, I have a Black father, you know, brothers and sisters, you know, so things like that. I can't stop because I feel a responsibility almost, because if I do stop, that could be the person that has a run-in with somebody who's uneducated that day. And I stopped before I was able to impact this person's life. Just the way I live, I don't think I'll be able to stop. I think it's something that I carry.
Well, we only got a couple more minutes in the program. Chief Campbell, with police being front and center in this discussion, you know, the Aaliyah and Jeremiah could be your children out there dealing with police officers. What's your final message to not only police officers, police departments, statewide, nationwide about reform? What's your final message in this discussion?
I really think that Jeremiah hit it and said it the best. You know, I wish that every police chief could sit down and listen to his heart, hear his articulation, feel his pain, and remove some of the blind spots that we as human beings all have. And I think one of the key is that all chiefs of police and police departments have to begin to open their ears once again to the public and listen to what they're saying and make the necessary changes.
Got a couple of more minutes for one more comment. I'll leave it to Councilwoman Alexander. What are you hoping for as we move along the next couple of months? What is your hope for change with police departments as they deal with young people?
My hope for change is that we be the change that we want to see. If you put yourselves in other people's shoes, think about the things that they actually are going through. Think about that young person that's scared. I mean, I'm scared if I get pulled over. I was scared when I was a young person, and it's terrifying. So if you think about what they're possibly thinking about in that car while you're pulling them over, might just change your dynamic on if you're going to go to them and just, you know, say any kind of thing, or you're going to actually have that empathy that they're hurting. We're all hurting and we want to see it. So really, let's be the change that we really want to see happen in our world.
Well, you've been looking at Lakeshore Public Media's ongoing community discussion, Race and Justice Here and Now. I'm Michael Puente. You can hear me on WBEZ in Chicago and also an off mic on Fridays at 11 on Lakeshore Public Radio. We're going to continue to try to have these ongoing discussions here on Lakeshore Public Radio and TV and media. And if you have a topic of discussion, let us know. You can send us a message on Facebook, on Twitter, or through email. And I'd like to thank our guests for tonight's conversation, Aaliyah Stewart of Merrillville, Jeremiah Sims of Portage, Hammond City Councilwoman Katrina Alexander, and Dion Campbell, Chief of Police in Michigan City, Indiana. Thank you all for being with us here tonight on Lakeshore Public Media's discussion on race and justice here and now. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.